Heard, ladies, we were blessed last Friday with a baby boy. Thank you. And just to save me an errand, I do feel close to all the attendees of all our classes, especially including the Thursday afternoon class, which, you know how important this class is to me and how much emphasis and work we put into it. So I'd like to personally inform you of the Brit Milah tomorrow. You are all my personal guests, as if I called you each one to the Brit Milah in the Ahayezer right next door at 9 o'clock. So that's it. That's the call. You'll save me a phone call. It's proper to call you personally, I understand, but we're busy. Okay. You can leave me your number and I'll call you. My pleasure. But it's personal. It's personal. I'm just worried about everybody on the tape that's going to hear it. I'll tell Rico, don't put out the tape till after. We're studying the Perasha Vayigash, which is the climax of the saga of the story of Yosef and the brothers. These Perashiyot are really all connected. It's one long story of how they sold them, how he went down to Egypt, how they came down to Egypt a couple of times, then they finally come back, and he reveals himself, and then Yaakov comes down. It's like one long, one long movie that the Torah splits up in three different parashiyot. But one thing that is worthy to point out in this story, how the brothers throughout this whole ordeal did not recognize Yosef. And the Pasuk says they didn't recognize him. So we take it for granted, but shouldn't they have recognized him? Or shouldn't they have at least maybe suspected that it's him? I know you're going to say, well, you know, they sold him when he was 17 years old. Now he's about 38, 39 years old. So it's a lot of years later. People change. I agree, but how much do they change to the extent where it's a total makeover, where you have no inkling that it's your brother? There was no... So you're going to tell me, well, he had a beard now. When they left him, he didn't have a beard. I agree. He spoke Egyptian. But with all that, you're talking about 10 brothers, smart people, people that are able to have a good perception on things. You know, they tell a story of a rabbi in Israel. They called him Rabbi Kahaneman. He was a Rosh Yeshiva of Panovich Yeshiva. So they tell a story. Once he was walking in Bnei Berak, and there was a fellow walking in front of him, away from him. So the rabbi's walking behind him, and he says, from this man's walk, I know who his father is. He said, come on, is that true? So he goes to him, he says, is your father Mr. So-and-so? He says, yes. He says, how did you know? He says, from your walk. Your father has the same exact walk. Which means it's possible sometimes if you have a good eye, you could realize who people are. I mean, in our community where the features of the parents and the children are very striking. So many times you go to somebody, oh, you look like you come from this family. And usually you can make a proper judgment. We know the faces, we know what the people look like. So you're telling me 10 brothers are staring at this man, and nobody has even a clue that it might be Yosef. And if I may even make the question a little stronger, Hachamim tell us, and I think we mentioned it, Yosef and Yaakov looked alike. I mean, so what, they forgot what their father looked like? I mean, it's something similar over here. So I saw an explanation to this. There's a beracha that we say in the Amidah every day. It's the fourth beracha in the Amidah. Probably the most important beracha of the Amidah. It's the beracha where we ask God for wisdom. Tachonen ladam da'at. Please God, give us intellect, give us understanding, give us brains, let us have knowledge. Tachonen ladam da'at. I say it's the most important blessing, because the way the rabbis set up the Amidah, the first three berachot are standard berachot. But the first beracha of the personal requests is the fourth beracha. So the first beracha is what? Praying for wisdom. So obviously that's the main priority to ask for. And we know that. Without wisdom, you have nothing. So I was thinking, I asked people this question. What do you think of when you say, Atachon el Adam Da'at? Assuming that a person is thinking of Kavanah when he has the Amidah, when he prays. They said, well, we think that God should give us wisdom in problem solving. We should have wisdom in raising our children. Should give us understanding socially, how to communicate to people, how to get idea across, how to make proper decisions maybe in business. You know, all important areas in life where you need guidance and you need brains. So I asked the fellow, or the people that we were talking to, do you pray that if somebody asks you your name, that you'll know how to answer them? So he said, of course not. Name, I know my name. I don't have to add my name's obvious. Or if somebody, Hashem, please, if somebody comes and asks me, what's 2 plus 2, that I should know 4? Of course not. I was thinking of that. That we know already. That's obvious. And my phone number, who doesn't know their phone number? That's only the major things. So I asked the people, I said, where do you think you know the answer to 2 plus 2 equals 4? Where do you think that answer comes from? It's only because God is giving you wisdom at that moment. And the proof is that, God forbid, if somebody is devoid of wisdom, somebody doesn't have knowledge, even ask him a simple question, 2 plus 2, he won't know the answer. Or God forbid somebody suffers an amnesia or a certain type of forgetfulness, Alzheimer's as they call it. It's possible that a parent won't even recognize his or her own children. 50 years you knew this person, and the child will walk in and the parent will say, who are you? What do you mean? I'm your son. I'm your daughter. If I don't know who you are, get out. Call the police on their own children. They have no recognition. Why is that? We're forced to say that at that moment in life, for whatever reason, in his infinite wisdom, God has taken away da'at. So, wisdom is not only advantageous in major things, but without da'at, even alifbet, we wouldn't know. Even a simple answer like our name or our phone number would become a difficult question. How many times does it happen where you know a person's name? You knew a person's name the day before, and you know a person's name the day after, and all of a sudden you see the person, and you what's the person's name again? It slipped my mind. What do you mean? How can it happen? You say, it happens a lot. It happens all the time. What happens? So it's not that your brain doesn't know how to work, because you knew the name yesterday, and the next day, or 5 minutes later, you remember the name. The explanation is, because at that moment, for whatever reason is, God closes the wisdom for a minute. And therefore, even something so simple, you don't get. So some of the people, when they have a dilemma, like such an easy thing, they say, "Atahon en Adam Da'at, please God, give me wisdom." Oh, that's the name. Oh, and they remember the name. But the point is, every moment, it's up to Borei Olam whether he wants to grant us this gift or not. So, I once saw one of the rabbis brings down that everybody gets wisdom on different levels, for example. For example, if I were to raise fingers up here, how many fingers do I have up? So right away you see 4 fingers. But if I went like this, right away say 8. Now I want to ask you a question. When you see these 8 fingers, do you have to count them? No, you don't have to count. You know, 8. How do you know? Because our brains work, most people's brains work, they could process up to a certain amount of numbers in one shot. When we see this, we see all 8 simultaneously. You don't have to count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, plus 3. No, it's simultaneously. There were some rabbis that were able to process hundreds of numbers simultaneously. Which means when they saw, they walked by a tree. One rabbi called Mariel Diskin. He walked by a tree, and he would look at the tree, and right away he would say, 742 leaves. And then one day the students played a joke on him, and they took 3 leaves off, and the next day he walks by, he says, 739 leaves. Now what does that mean? He saw that tree like you see the number 2 like this. That's how he saw it. He saw big numbers, like it's a swirl. He didn't have to count right away. He saw it like that. They tell a story about Mariel Diskin, that one time a lady sent to his office a cloth for the rabbi to render. Is it tahor? Is it tamir? She was going to the mikveh. She needed to know. So the rabbi looks at the cloth, says tahor. It's okay. Sends it out. Fine. She goes home. The husband says, you sure tahor? Maybe it's tamir. I don't know. We got to ask him again. We'll double check. So now the rabbi looks at how many cloths a day. I mean, he's a rabbi of a community. So they send it back. So they put it back in the pile. So the rabbi's looking, tahor, tamir, tahor, tamir. He gets this one. He says, I saw this one already. They tell him. And the people knew he saw it. He said, rabbi, how do you know you saw it already? He says, because the stitch count I remember. The stitch count is 273 across and 279 down. He just looked at a cloth, but his brain worked where he processes the whole thing. It's like he saw the number 3. He saw the 3, there's no question. He didn't look at it for more than a second, but that's how his brain worked. In large numbers, his brain was able to figure it out. So some people get da'at like that, some people get da'at, but it's the same point, though, to whatever extent our da'at is, that same Mariel Diskin, if God wanted to take away that gift, ask him 2 plus 2, and he doesn't know the answer. So the same thing when it comes to recognizing people. Of course the brothers should have, when they saw that face, known who they're looking at. And probably after Yosef says, I'm Yosef, they probably said, how did we know this? Look at him. Were we crazy? How did we miss this over here? Look, he has his father's eyes, he has his father's cheekbone, the beard, the thing. How did we see this? But at the moment that they were with Yosef before, God just took away their da'at. God, it's an amazing thing. If God takes away your wisdom and your perception, you won't even be able to see what's staring you in the face. Even the most obvious, even the most elementary of answers, you won't get. And that's a lesson that when we pray the Amidah, you can't forget the basic even. Please God, give me wisdom, just simple sense. Like, yeah, of course we want the deep stuff, but don't take for granted even the easy stuff is also coming from the proof of the pudding. The brothers were 10 smart people, 10 geniuses, and they couldn't figure out something that was so simple as that their brother is their brother. And that's the lesson that we learn from that part. The Parasha continues, and the Parasha says how Yehuda, who is the fourth son of Yaakov, he now has a confrontation with Yosef. This is after Yosef says, you know, Binyamin's got to stay. Binyamin, you can't bring him home to your father. And Yehuda starts to tell Yosef, what are you talking about? We have a father back home. And if you take this boy, it's going to kill our father. Already, we lost one of our brothers. And our father didn't recover. Now you're going to take the second one from him, forget it. It's disaster. And Yehuda really is making an argument for his case that you can't take Binyamin. So I saw from one of the rabbis, Yosef at the end, by the way, after this whole dialogue with Yehuda, he says, okay, fine, I need Yosef, I'm Yosef, and he admits. So I saw from one of the rabbis that asks, what did Yehuda tell Yosef at this point that Yosef didn't already know? He didn't tell him anything that he didn't know. Already in last week's parasha, they told him, we have a father, he's an old man, he's frail, he's upset, we lost a brother. So it sounds like he just repeats the same story over again. And for some reason, this time, Yosef says, okay, you got me, I'm Yosef, you broke me down. And he reveals himself. What did Yehuda add to the argument that got Yosef to break? So I saw from a great rabbi, a student of Rabbi Feinstein, he said like this. The student said like this. His name is Rav Nissen Alpert. He says like this. It wasn't what he said, but it was how he said it. What do we mean? If you notice until now, the brothers are always talking to Yosef through an interpreter, through a melitz. Why? Because they think Yosef's an Egyptian. He speaks Arabic. And the brothers speak Hebrew. So they always had to tell the interpreter their claim, and the interpreter would tell Yosef. They were going through a middleman. That was the only way they can communicate. But he says, at this point, it says, Vayigash Elav, Yehuda was talking to Yosef face to face. But the interesting thing is, Yehuda screaming, or communicating, I should say, better in Hebrew. But what is Yehuda doing? Yosef doesn't understand Hebrew, according to him. So he's talking to him in a foreign language. Why did he get rid of the interpreter if he's trying to make his point? So it's like somebody coming screaming at you in Chinese. The explanation is like this. When you talk to it through an interpreter, true, Yosef might understand the words, but you definitely lose the feeling. You definitely lose the heart. You definitely lose the internal emotions of a conversation. At this point, Yehuda is talking to Yosef from emotions. And Yosef just sees Yehuda with the excitement that he has. He doesn't have to understand what he's saying, but already he sees that it's coming from a true heart, and he sincerely means it, and therefore that breaks him. And that's, a story they tell about Rav Aaron Cutler, Zichrono Livracha. We might have said it, that during the Holocaust, Rabbi Cutler was very instrumental in wiring money to the German authorities, the German officials, maybe $100,000 for a Jew, and he would bribe them and save Jews. And he collected money. The hard part of the rabbi's job was to wire the money. And he needed the assistance of the government to help him with these wire transfers. So he once went to Washington, D.C. with a businessman that was very close to him by the name of Irving Bunim. And they went to visit the Secretary of the Treasury, a fellow by the name of Henry Morgenthau, Jr., who happened to be Jewish, and he's in the right position. So they go to the Morgenthau, and Rabbi Cutler is fire. He's excited. He has to do this job. Every minute you're wasting, God forbid, Jews are being bludgeoned in Germany. So the rabbi gets up in front of Morgenthau, and he speaks in Yiddish. Then he starts banging on the table, and he tells him, if you don't help us wire this money, all the blood of all those innocent people that are getting killed in Germany is on your shoulders, is on your head. Strong. Bunim now has to interpret. You're talking to a big shot in the government. You can't tell him these things over here. No? So Bunim is a diplomat. He watered it down. He says, the rabbi, he's just saying what a great merit it would be if you can help him. And he spinned it. He turned it around. He made it positive. So Rabbi Cutler saw what Bunim was doing. So he starts banging on the table, Rabbi Aaron Cutler. He says, "Nay, Mr. Bunim." He says, "No, Mr. Bunim. That's not what I said. Tell him what I said." So Morgenthau tells Bunim, "You don't have to say anything. I understand exactly what he's talking about." Now, what does it mean? All of a sudden, Morgenthau got a crash course in Yiddish and in 5 minutes, all of a sudden he understood what he's saying. So when he saw the fire and the sincerity in Rabbi Cutler's heart, so that's all you have to see. This man is true. This man over here is passionate about what he's saying. So from the emotions already, the man must be telling the truth, and therefore I agree. And that's exactly what Yehuda was doing over here. He tried the diplomacy, he tried the talking and all that, and now he came to him brother to brother. He poured out his heart, and Yosef could now, when he saw the true feelings that Yehuda had, whether Yehuda thinks Yosef's understanding or not, but the language of the heart is universal. Everybody understands that language. That language is a universal language, and that's exactly why he did what he did. But I want to point out, and I said it by mistake before, Yehuda wasn't yelling. Doesn't say anywhere over here that in this discussion Yehuda raised his voice. On the contrary, it seems Yehuda spoke to Yosef in a low voice. How do I know that? So the pasuk says, "Vayigash elav Yehuda, vayomer bi Adoni, please, my master, yedaberna avdecha davar beozne Adoni. I have something to tell you in your ear." So it sounds like he was saying it, you know, in a low tone. Why did Yehuda whisper? So I saw a very interesting thought, which is actually a very important thing if you're involved in debates, and if you're involved in arguing, you have to know this. Usually, when a person shouts, 9 out of 10 times, that's a giveaway that he has a weak argument. It's very important to know that. You start getting excited because you have to compensate. You have to compensate your argument. If the argument is good, you can just speak it out. And on the merit of your words, it stands. But when you know your words don't have too much merit, so you have to yell and scream as a diversion to get your point across. There was once a speaker, a sermonizer. He had his notes on the lectern. After he finished speaking, he got off the stage and he left his notes on the podium. So somebody went up to see, you know, what do the notes say? So at one point it says, you know, on the side margin, wave your arms, meaning as to make a point. Another part said over there, you know, speak with pronunciation, pause. And then they see on one spot it says, argument weak, yell loudly. Which means the guy knew, he says, I have to sell this to the people. So just yell and maybe they'll get diverted from the yelling and I'll get it by them. So therefore we have a saying that Shlomo HaMelech said, Divrei Chachamim Benachat Nishmaim. The words of rabbis, the words of scholars, are heard when they're spoken softly. Because usually if you speak it softly, that's an indication that you know what you're talking about. And not only that, but even if you have something smart to say, and you're right, and you have a sound argument, if you're going to start yelling, the other person will not hear what you're saying. Because the other person now is too busy trying to think of how he's going to make a rebuttal to answer you, because he yelled at him. So if you want to be effective in communicating, they're saying it should be a sound argument, but speak it softly. Because you could scream the same words and the people won't hear you. All they're hearing is noise, and they're just thinking how to yell at you back to protect their dignity. And therefore the pasuk says over here, Yehuda believed that he was saying something sound. And therefore he said it softly. Let me speak to you in your ear. And that was the biggest indication that Yehuda was right. Learn that the next time you get into an argument. If you find yourself yelling, then you better stop and say, oh, am I saying something that's emet? Or maybe I'm just screaming over here to ram an opinion down somebody's throat. Let me rethink my opinion. Furthermore, in the Perasha, in Perek Mem He, in Pasuk Yud Bet, after Yosef reveals himself to the brothers, so he says like this to them. He says, he's trying to calm them down, I have nothing against you, I forgive you, I'm going to take care of you, I'll support you, you live in a special area in Mitzrayim called Goshen. So one of the things he says is, to prove that he's indeed Yosef, one of the things to prove, I'm really Yosef, they couldn't believe it, they were in a state of shock. He says, he says, you see, Binyamin sees, kifi hamdaber alechem. You see that my mouth is talking to you.
So my mouth is talking. That's how you talk. You talk with your mouth. What did Yosef mean? My mouth is talking to you. So that she writes, Kifiyam daber, he says, I'll prove to you that I'm Yosef because I'm speaking Lashon HaKodesh. Because I'm speaking Hebrew. How would I know Hebrew? Lashon HaKodesh. So what does that mean? Yosef's trying to prove his identity. Hey, listen, would I know Hebrew if I wasn't Yosef? How many people in the world know Hebrew? But I saw another explanation where that she might be coming to tell us that he spoke Lashon HaKodesh. He's saying, look at my language. Hakamim tell us there's four levels in creation. We've mentioned it several times here. Domem, Someyach, Chai, Medaber. Let's review it. Domem is the lowest level. Domem is inanimate object, like a table. That's the stone, a rock, exactly, a piece of wood. It's inanimate, it has no life. The next level on the stages of creation is a Someyach. That's like a plant. Now, a plant already has life, it grows. Then you have Domem Someyach Chai. That's the animals. They have life, they reproduce, they have movement. And then you have the highest level, which is Medaber. Medaber is the one that's able to communicate, the one that's able to speak. That's human beings. Now I ask you a question. What makes us different from animals, it seems, is that we have the ability to speak, and they don't. But the truth of the matter is, today we've seen many studies and many proofs that animals also have a language. Today they show you how the seals communicate with each other, and the dogs, when they're barking, they have their own language, and the birds that are chirping, they signal to each other exactly when to migrate and when to come back. So if you're talking about we're different than animals because we're medaber, you'll forgive me, but they're also medaber. They might not have an expansive vocabulary like we have, I agree. They might not have such a sophisticated language like we have, but they communicate, they talk. So then what makes us different than animals? And the explanation, they say, is it's not the vocabulary, but it's the ability of human beings to control their speech. That already an animal does not have. An animal says what it wants. You know, you never hear a bird tell its neighbor, no, Lashon Hara. Animals speak. The animals are worried about we shouldn't curse, or we shouldn't swear, or we shouldn't talk idle chatter, or we shouldn't slander. You think a grizzly bear learned the laws of the Hafetz Chaim exactly? What is he allowed to speak about? He wants to speak, he's going to speak, and he wants to talk things that are negative talk, he's going to talk. What separates human beings, ladies, from animals is not that we speak, but it's what we speak. Now, this is frightening. If what I'm saying is true, it's frightening. Because you're telling me that if a person's not careful with his speech, and he speaks whatever they want, so there's no difference between that human and a grizzly bear and an animal and a monkey. It's the same thing. Because what separates you? You eat, they eat. You reproduce, they reproduce. You sleep, they sleep. You speak, they speak. So what separates you? The only thing that separates us is the quality of our speech. Speech of human beings must be Kodesh. The speech that we have must be a holy tongue. It must be a tongue that holds back and restrains itself from, God forbid, saying things that are forbidden and things that are asur. Now listen good. Listen what we say now. Yosef, if you remember, and of course we're talking about Tzaddikim over here, I remind you. Yosef, if you remember, he spoke Lashon Hara about the brothers. You cannot deny that. The Pasuk says, if you remember, he went to the father and he, what should I say, tattletailed on them. He told the father things that they were doing. It's not a sin like we know it, but it was a problem. Yosef
like most tzaddikim, like all the tzaddikim, after they sin, they recognize their sin, they recognize their avon. Yosef wanted to make teshuvah. Yosef knew he shouldn't have spoke lashon hara. So how did Yosef make teshuvah? Yosef, for the next 22 years, worked on proper speech. Yosef worked on that he's not going to speak lashon hara. He's going to be extra careful before the words come out of his mouth. So now when he's revealing himself to the brother, he says, boys, my dear brothers, I'm Yosef, because look at my mouth. I speak lashon HaKodesh. Not that I speak Hebrew, but my lashon is Kodesh. My speech is holy. I repented. I made good. I'm not the same Yosef that I was 22 years ago. Maybe it was my tongue that started this whole mess that got you jealous, that caused you to hate me. But now look, I'm rehabilitated. Just look at my mouth now. And the brothers saw that he talks lashon HaKodesh. Not that he speaks Hebrew necessarily, but the language that he speaks is a refined speech. It's a proper speech. And therefore they said, this is Yosef in the sense that he's not the same Yosef of 22 years ago. Furthermore, in Perasha, there's a interesting Rashi. I pointed it out to the men this morning. In Perek Mem Vav Pasuk Chav Tet. Perek Mem Vav Pasuk Chav Tet. Listen to Pasuk. Ve'yesor Yosef Merkavto. Yosef gets on his horses, his chariots. Vayal Lekrat Yisrael Aviv Goshna. He goes to greet his father. This is it. This is it. This is the moment we've been waiting for. The reunion between Yosef and Yaakov. 22 years, they didn't see each other, and now they're going to meet for the first time. And the Pasuk writes, Vayera Elav. He appeared to him. Cryptic. He appeared to him. So we want, who appeared to who? There's two people here. Did Yaakov appear to Yosef? Did Yosef appear to Yaakov? Oh, they both appear together, really. That's the truth of the matter. When two people are standing in front of each other, they're both appearing to each other. Now she writes, to add to the mystery, Yosef nir'a el Aviv. Yosef appeared to his father. What's going on here? Yosef appeared to his father. So I saw an explanation like this from Rabbi Eliyahu Lopian. He says like this, in life, there's a concept of focusing your energy on one point. For example, Lavdil karate. You see these guys, they're able to, they hold a piece of wood in front of them. It was a one shot, boom, they're able to break a piece of wood. Where do you get all that strength from? They teach them how to collect all the strength in their body, from all the different parts of their body, they focus it to one spot, and boom. So when they're hitting the piece of wood, it's a collective strength of all their body. It's in the brain they use it. It's like a laser beam. Why is a laser beam so sharp? Because normally light goes out. The rays of the light go out. What a laser beam does, it takes all the light and it focuses it on one, and then it's able to have a power. In emotions, it's the same thing. People have many emotions. And sometimes we have two or three emotions working at the same time. For example, when Yosef's going to see his father for the first time in 22 years, definitely there are two emotions running through his body. Emotion number one, I can't wait to see my father. I miss my father. I mean, there's a personal gratification over here. I didn't see this man in 22 years. I love this man. I can't wait to hug my father and see my father. The second emotion that works in Yosef at this moment also is, I also want to give my father pleasure in seeing me. I mean, that's also, how exciting is my father going to be that he's going to be able to enjoy that I'm alive? That also works through Yosef's mind. Now, if it's me and you, we'll do both. You can do both at the same time. My father will enjoy by seeing me. I'll enjoy by seeing my father. He enjoyed, I enjoyed. Beautiful experience. But not Yosef. Yosef does not want to compromise his father's pleasure and his father's benefit in this experience. And therefore, when Yosef is standing in front of his father, it's almost as if he's collecting all his emotions just to stand in front of his father, that his father should see him. Because he doesn't want his personal enjoyment to dilute the other emotion. Look at the respect that he has for his father. Look at the intent that he had over here. I mean, he could have, for every, in all good right, he could go see his father, hug each other, and enjoy it together. But he was so pure, he said, this is my father's moment. I don't want to spoil it by letting myself also enjoy the moment. I want to focus all my emotional energy to stand in front of my father, that he should see me, and he should derive all the pleasure, and he should derive all the benefit. Look at the respect. Look at the kibud av that a son has, that he doesn't even want it. This is coming to him. It's not like he's stealing or doing anything wrong. And by the way, this is something you can't even monitor. Who's going to know the difference? Well, you think Yaakov's going to tell him, I saw you looking at me. You were enjoying it? Whatever. You're allowed to look at your father. But Yosef is so pure that the Torah points out that he did it solely for selfless reasons in order to give his father the pleasure. We see a similar concept, and I'll let you go, towards the end of the parasha, when now Paro is telling Yosef, okay, bring your father down to Egypt, and bring your family down to Egypt. So it says, Paro writes, or the Pasuk writes, take wagons, take agalot, to transfer your children down. You bring your children down in wagons, and also you'll bring your father down also. So the rabbis point out, Da'atze Kinimi Ba'alei Tosafot says, Paro refers to the wagons regarding transporting of the children. But how did Paro expect Yaakov's going to come down? Was he going to send him a private chauffeur, a separate wagon? I mean, there's no mention of it. It says, take wagons for the children and bring your father. How are you going to bring your father? We need a special wagon. So the Da'atze Kinim explains, Paro was saying, and your father, you'll carry on your shoulders. Which means, Rabbi Gifter points out, we're so far from the truth of what the real level of respect or decency or ethics are. I mean, who has to teach this to us, no less? Paro. Which means even to Paro, the guy's the biggest Rasha, but he understands, well, you're going to put your father in a wagon being led by horses, that it's going to shake, and it's going to put him in the backseat of a car? Unheard of! You'll take the wagons for your children, and of course, you stand there, your father, you carry. Is there any other way? This is coming from Paro. Look at the standard it was in the olden days. What does it mean, respecting parents? And the brothers are not shocked by this. Yosef's not shocked. Of course we'll carry our father. What do you mean? Of course we're going to carry our father. How would we let our father come down? Look how far we are from the truth. Not only in respect, but in everything. Just look 50 years ago. 50 years, you don't need Paro for this. Of what modesty was in this country. What decency was in this country. Public schools would have separate entrances for boys and girls, even though they were co-ed. But there was a certain understanding. You have to walk through the same door. I can't walk through the same door. They're going to... A certain level already they understood. Today, look how far we veered off from the true course of what was not so far long ago was a standard that was set even by Goyim. We have to return back. Maybe never to that standard again, because that standard has been lost. It's hard to tell everybody, go home, make sure you carry your parents next time you see them across Ocean Parkway. That already might be unrealistic. But it's just to show you that there's so much distance between what we're doing and we think is ethically correct to maybe to what the real level was. For us, we have to strive to try to get to those levels. Especially regarding decency and morality and right and wrong, we veered so far that we have no idea what's right and wrong anymore. We can't even make simple decisions. We call bad good, and we call good bad, and we have to try to come back. And like I started in the beginning, to pray to Borei Olam for da'at, to pray for God for wisdom, that we'll be able to understand from what's proper and for what's not. Ladies, I remind you again, tomorrow, Brit Milah, Achayezid at 9 o'clock. God bless you all, and Shabbat Shalom. Okay.